Welcome to Hype, episode 51. Hype is Hypeable.com's entertainment podcast, where we'll take you through the latest week in news. There's been a lot of big news this week, so I say we just head straight into it this week. My name is Selena, and I'm joined by Pam and Marima. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
It's actually ladies this week.
I know.
Yeah.
Only ladies.
And I was
so kicked the boys out.
We did, and I was so excited because I've seen Mad Max, and I was all ready to go girl power with you guys, and you totally let me down. So I'll have to fight the patriarchy all by myself.
Hey, now we can all fight the patriarchy, even if we haven't seen Mad Max.
I don't know about that. It's No, I would let you guys on my monster truck anytime. So before we get started properly, just reminding you guys of the usual contact info. You can find us, of course, on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can follow us on Twitter at hypeablehype. And as always, we encourage you to head on over to iTunes and leave a review and rate us to help other people discover us. All right. We're going to start with How We Hype, which is where we go through the biggest stuff that the hosts have been doing in the past week or what they'll be getting up to over the coming week. As I said before, I saw Mad Max. I went to see it yesterday. Because I can't talk about the movie, I'm just going to talk about me going to see the movie. So I went by myself because no one wanted to go with me. It was this, like, huge screen. It was me and then some groups of guys sitting behind me, like a few rows of boys. The movie starts, the light is on, and I'm like, oh my god, Jesus. So I run out, like, while Max is still talking, and I figure I don't need backstory. So I go out and I find someone who works in cinema. I'm like, can you please come turn the light off, because it's, you know, and ruining the movie. And they were like, yeah, sure, we'll bring someone in, blah blah blah. 15 minutes later, still no one has come. So I run out again, and I miss, like, some really important scene introducing the lead character. And I, like, I'm really mad, and I just, like, shout down the stairs, like, someone turn the light off! And I, like, go back
what?
In. And this time it works. And then I, like, for the rest of the movie, I was like, yeah. I'm cool too.
That's the best story ever.
That is. I also can't imagine you, like, legitimately being mad about anything, so I'm trying to, like, see in my head what angry Selena would sound like, and I just can't do it.
It's because she's the happy Danish host.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I'm so happy that every once in a while, like, I will get so angry and it'll all come out at once, and I'll be like, rawr! And then I'll get over
yeah.
it.
See, it's much better to be angry all the time, like I am.
I find that
much better.
Mm-hmm. No, but yeah. So the movie though was very, very good. I was very surprised. I think the reason it's gotten such a lot of positive reviews really isn't that it's necessarily that good or even that feminist. Like I was reading some reviews after, like, am I crazy or was this kind of not as feminist as I thought it was? But I think it's because you come in and it's like an action, it's cars, it's dudes, it's like there's the one woman, but, you know, that's like, you know, she figures as kind of like the token woman at the beginning, and then as the movie goes on, you're like, whoa, more women doing things, and they're allowed to do things without dying for it, and like, well, in some cases anyway, I'm not gonna be too specific, but. And I think people are just genuinely surprised because it's not the typical action movie that you're expecting it to be. And it just sort of puts all other action movies to shame, I think, because they all seem so formulaic now compared to this. It's not a perfect movie, but definitely a very good movie. And I think we need something like this. And I think it says a lot that we see this and think, oh my god, it's so feminist. Because it's not, but there's just been such a drought of anything resembling this type of movie. So yeah, anyway, watch it. You guys are gonna like it, I think.
I'm trying to get to it this weekend. I have been meaning to for the last few weeks, and life has interrupted me, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the good thing about it, I think, is like everyone just comes out of it going, oh my god, it's so good. So I actually like haven't had any spoilers because no one talks about the plot or like anything that happens. So it's just like, oh man, and then the girl comes and then, oh, and so feminist and oh, it's so great and oh, I got to see it again. Like that's the whole conversation. Mm-hmm. So that's good. At least, yeah, spoiler avoidance has worked well.
It does play on some stereotypes. I mean, it definitely does, but it also subverts some things in a really interesting way. So yeah, yes, that's the end. I'm gonna dangerously close to spoilers here. So
can I talk about my movie?
You can.
So I am seeing Inside Out this weekend and I'm so excited because it has my two favorite people in the world, Amy Poehler and Mindy Kaling.
Yes.
And I don't even care about the rest of the movie or like anything else that happens. No, I'm lying. I'm actually a huge fan of animated movies, which maybe you would not pick about me, but yeah, I love Pixar like with all my heart and I'm so excited about this. Also because I guess the promotional campaign has had some people asking some questions about like gender stereotypes and et cetera. So I think it'll be interesting because it seems like it's intentional. You know, they couldn't have done all of that without realizing like, well, this is weird. We're kind of reinforcing stereotypes. So I'm assuming that the film is going to hopefully subvert some of those in some way. And also Amy Poehler and Mindy Kaling.
Yes.
I can't overstate like how excited that makes me. So yeah, I'm seeing it this weekend and then I will report back. I think it's out in like a couple weeks, 2 weeks maybe in the States. So not far for people to wait, but good times.
No, months for me, but whatever.
Well, years more likely.
Yes.
I went to the movies this week too, where I saw a lot of movies. We got invited to a San Andreas situation over at Universal Studios Hollywood, where I saw something that kind of almost made me pee my pants because I was so excited, but we'll talk about that later. So yeah, so San Andreas is like the big action flick starring The Rock and a bunch of other people are in it. Like Colton Haynes is in it for a hot second and Alexander Daddario, who did a stint on New Girl, is in it. So it's got a decent cast. And they invited us out to kind of watch a preview of the movie in this little trailer thing they've been hauling around to like all the different conventions and stuff. And it was kind of cool. Like, you see the movie in like 4D, so things kind of pop out at you like they would at a theme park situation where you put on 3D glasses and then the chairs kind of vibrate. So you get the whole earthquake experience. And then I went to see the movie and I came out a little scarred because my beloved city of San Francisco just got pummeled.
Oh.
And the city I currently live in, which is Los Angeles, also gets pummeled. So I'm pretty much fearing for my life now.
Time to move to Australia.
Pretty much.
Or Denmark.
Yes, nothing bad happens in movies here.
And then I was a little under the weather, so I watched this movie called Barely Lethal. It came out in theaters, but it also is available on VOD. And I just kind of picked it because it stars Hailee Steinfeld, who, of course, just did Pitch Perfect 2, and then Sophie Turner, who's in Game of Thrones. And I was like, this should be interesting.
I have such a bad feeling about this movie. Is it as bad as I think it is?
It actually, to be honest with you guys, like, don't run out and feel like you have to see it. I kind of just saw it because I was homesick. It has a plot line that seems like it could be good if it was done well, but overall I felt a little unenthused about the whole situation.
Right. I mean, I saw a trailer and I remember, like, the first, like, 20 seconds of the trailer, I was so pumped. I was like, yeah, this Academy of Spies for girls. And then it's like, but I want to go to high school and be a normal girl. And I just facepalmed, like, what year is this? Is this the 90s? Like, what is happening? So obviously, the movie could be a lot better than the trailer, but I didn't get a very good sense that this was going to be great.
Yeah, just like, it's definitely not something like, pretty much I saw it so that all of the listeners don't have
wouldn't have to.
And, yeah, if you're curious, I mean, check it out. You might like it more than I did, but like Selena kind of alluded to, it was one of those plot lines that could have been really funny and really good if they had done more with the script. And I just kind of felt like it fell flat for me. So
that's a shame.
That's my review in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, great. We've all seen some movies this week. I love it. I love how, since starting Hype, I'm seeing a lot more movies than I did before.
There's so much pressure.
I know, right?
To talk about. So it's like, oh, I better go see a movie this week.
Yeah. But it's good. It's great. We're keeping up. It's kind of like when I started writing morning news for Hypeable, like suddenly I know a lot of stuff about these things that I had no clue about before.
That I'm was like when I joined Hypeable. I mean, like my my friends thought it was the funniest thing in the world when I joined Hypeable, because like they were like, do you even know which Chris Hemsworth, do you know who that is? And I was like, yeah, it was on like Neighbours or one of those shows in Australia, which is not true. And I know which one he is now. So like the joy of Hypeable.
Yeah, and we'll never be able to go back to real life after this. It's kind of tragic and beautiful. Sure, let's go with that. So let's move on to some news here before it gets too depressing. The first story this week.
First of all, Eddie Redmayne is confirmed to star in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I know, Selena, you were like not super sure about this, but I'm so excited.
Yay!
I love him so much. And even if you are not maybe... Like, I totally get the argument of, well, we don't even know what the character is like, so it's hard to judge. But I think, objectively, he's a fantastic actor. So at least there's that going into the film, which is super exciting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. Whatever. I'm cool with like, it.
No, I didn't. Whatever. Well, then, so, funnily enough, the lead casting was actually not the biggest news for Fantastic Beasts this week, because we kind of all knew that was coming.
We kind of knew. I was actually surprised by how much traction that story got, because I figured it wasn't really news. Like, we kind of knew it, but whatever.
Yeah, I think everyone was just waiting for, like, the official confirmation. Yeah. So, it's always nice to get that. It's kind of like Spider-Man, you know, these things drag on, and you're like, course. didn't we know that already? But anyway... Eddie Redmayne, confirmed. The exciting part was we also had released three character descriptions for three characters who are going to be the other leads with him, and also the names of some people who are testing for those. So the three characters are, there's two girls and a boy. We have Jacob, who we had already heard of before. We already had his name. He is described as Newt's rival. Then we have Tina and Queenie, and Tina is grounded, and Queenie is Tina's older sister and a bombshell. These, if I'm saying it in a stupid voice, it means it's a quote, just so you know.
Okay.
We have some of the people who are testing for these, like Saoirse Ronan, Dakota Fanning, and Kate Upton, and Catherine Waterson, and I mean... I don't know. I have some thoughts on this, but like, what do you guys think about this? If you can get over the apparent ridiculousness of the name, which seemed to be what you were laughing at, Selena.
Yes. Well, I feel like there's this is going to be a general trend for this episode, but it's also white. Like, that's all, you know. Yes. I know everyone's saying that, but we have to say that it's so damn white.
Yeah.
And generic. Yeah, those actresses they choosing as well. Like, I'm a huge Saoirse Ronan fan, but Jesus, blonde and blue eyed, all of them. Like,
yeah. And then the guys are also super white. They're kind of the, like, I guess chubby, like slightly older. I mean, maybe same age as Redmayne, but it's hard to know what age Newt is going to be. So who knows if you're older or not. But yeah, I think this is a problem. And I was posting a little bit about this on Twitter when this news was announced. But like, I love Harry Potter. I will love Harry Potter until like the day that I die. But those books are super white also. And unnecessarily, like they didn't have to be white. And so when they cast the films, the characters didn't have to be white either. But you kind of go like, okay, well, you know, that was a definite criticism that the books and the films had. So you would hope going into this, which there is no like canon, quote unquote, to back it up, there is no reason for them to all be white. And in fact, it's set, I mean, I'm not going to get all like historian on everyone, but it's set in New York in like the 1920s, 1930s, which was actually a time when there was a huge community of African-American artists in Harlem. So like, even the argument of historical accuracy, like, oh, they'd all be white, is not true. So,
and I'm always going to come back to Merlin whenever we talk about historical accuracy and say, screw you, you know, Gwen was amazing and whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. So, like, it's so unnecessary, and the fact that they're calling them the four leads, like, it's going to be these four, and there's not a single, like, diverse casting choice there is really disappointing for the film. And even though I'm still super excited about it, like, how have they not thought about this going into this project? You know, how has this not come up?
It just, like, you know, the almost kind of seems to me, and I don't understand why they would feel this way, because Harry Potter sells anyway. But just looking at the names of the actresses, like Kate Upton, like, are they just trying to fill seats?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't really, and it's just, it's such a strange concept to me if they were, because Harry Potter is one of the biggest franchises in the history of film and books, and people will go see this anyway. Like, we know nothing about the story, really, but the entire fandom is behind it. Like, everybody's going to go check out at least the first one, because it's a new story by Joe. So I just don't understand, like, I don't know. It just, like, that I think that the actresses that they're picking, like, not stick out to me more, because it's almost like they need the star power for the movie.
It's so weird when they've cast Eddie Redmayne, because you would feel like, I mean, I totally agree. The entire Harry Potter fandom, first of all, is going to go and check this out. But I also think the general public is going to check it out, because they just have to say, you know, Harry Potter prequel, and people are going to go, oh, like, that's, I didn't know about that. Sounds interesting. I'm going to go check that out. You know, Harry Potter is so entrenched in, like, the popular zeitgeist. Yeah. And then they have Eddie Redmayne, who is, like, a super serious actor as well. Like, he's an Academy Award-winning actor. So you would feel like, that's enough star power.
Yeah, now he's a household name. Like, a couple years ago, he wasn't. So you're right. But also, well, I guess it does speak a lot in terms of the fact that they have American actresses that they're considering, because for Harry Potter, Joe was like, no, it's got to be all British. It's got to be all British, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, I mean, that's not necessarily diverse, but I also thought that that was interesting too. Like, those are the first two things that popped out to me. And then after that, I kind of had the same thought process that you guys did. So they're all very they're cut from a certain cloth, like, aesthetically speaking.
For sure.
Yeah. it's kind of ridiculous for a film that's opening in 2016 and is going to be maybe, like, a huge blockbuster.
Yeah. Well, and then all I was thinking about was that the most diverse Hogwarts ever was when Alfonso Cuarón was filming the series, and then he just put in all these, like,
damn weird movie, though.
Yeah, it was so weird, but I will hand it to him. He cast a lot of colorful extras.
He did.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Too bad that, like, it was so weird.
I like Prisoner of Azkaban.
Oh.
I guess... The only other thing to kind of mention in this, which one of our commenters pointed out on Hyperbole, is that Tina could be short for Porpentina, who is Newt's wife, we know from, I think that was in the Fantastic Beasts book. So,
oh, Joe and her names.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know who that is, but I believe you. And then I looked it up and was like, you are true. Like, that is a correct thing to say.
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe that's the start of a lifelong romance.
I cannot wait to see that romance. All right, then. Moving on, now that we've alienated half our listeners, we are super excited. It should be clarified.
I'm so
we definitely
excited.
Are.
That's why I'm so disappointed.
We nitpick, like, because we love, I think.
I love Harry Potter more than, like, any other fandom, probably. And that's why you're like, but Joe's involved. Like, why didn't... That's why you're so disappointed, because you think, oh, Joe's so involved. Why didn't you say, like, guys, maybe they should be a little more diverse, you know? Well, you're like, Joe, you're letting me down personally, because we obviously know each other deeply and, like...
So yeah, obviously. Well, the next time you guys have a chat, you can ask her.
Yeah,
I'll let us know what she says. Yeah. So I'm staying on the topic of big casting news. Oh my god, I banked on this. I was like, we're going to get Spider-Man this week, and I'm going to have the top story, and I will throw my hands up in victory. But no, still no Spider-Man, and some interesting developments with casting, actually, for Marvel's newly acquired hero is that Asa Butterfield has seemed like a lock-in for the part for several weeks. Even so much so, I'm going to out Josh here. He had a post already in Hypebeast going like, Asa Butterfield is Spider-Man, because all the reports were saying this is what's going to happen. A few days ago, we learned that actually Asa Butterfield is only one of six actors who have been screen tested by Marvel for the role. Last Saturday, they brought six actors down to Atlanta, where they're filming Captain America Civil War. And of course, Spider-Man is probably going to appear in Civil War, so they're kind of on a tight schedule here. But obviously, it's a huge decision, so we understand why they're sort of taking their time with it. The six actors testing were Asa Butterfield, who is still kind of considered the front runner, Tom Holland, and four sort of slightly less known actors: Judah Lewis, Matthew Lintz, Charlie Plummer, and the one I'm rooting for is Charlie Rowe, who was on Red Band Society. And also he was the guy sitting next to Octavia Spencer at the Oscars when Neil Patrick Harris did his weird box thing. So you might know him from his confused looks. So a few different things, and then I'll let you guys say what you think of it. Again, we're dealing with a group of very generic-looking white boys. For this particular role, you know, obviously people are saying, well, you know, Spider-Man, Peter Parker, that is what he looks like, to which I say that's ridiculous, because if you can make him British, you can change, you know, you can look at other, the way, you know what I mean? Like, it's just dumb. Another thing to note as well is that these actors are mostly all in their late teens. Like, they're supposed to start the franchise being 14-ish. Asa Butterfield is 18, Tom Holland and Charlie Rowe are both 19. We had a commenter actually say that she thought that they all looked too young, which I thought was funny. But we are sort of looking at these actors sort of almost basically in their 20s having to play 14-year-olds. So interesting that Marvel is going that way with them as well.
Oh, I just don't care.
I was going to say just the age thing, like, I get it, but it also makes sense because they don't have to worry about, like, school and stuff if they're 18. For sure. So, like, we should just point that out, that, like, we're fully aware that, like, that they just get, you know, 18-year-olds that look like they're 14 to play.
Still astounding to me. And I realize they found actors who all look very young, but it's just astounding to me because, like, puberty is going to happen. And like, I know, you know, it slows down around this age, but I mean, it's not uncommon for boys in their 20s, like early 20s, to grow, like, look older suddenly.
That's true.
So it's like, whoever they pick is like, maybe it's taking so long because they're like doing tests, like, what's this guy gonna look like in 5 years?
It's interesting that you brought up diversity again, though, because it wasn't long ago that I think one of the Marvel producers mentioned that they would love to see Community's Donald Glover, or former Community star Donald Glover, as Spider-Man. And so it's almost like they gave hope that maybe they were going to go the unconventional route. I don't know very much about the Spider-Man comic books. Maybe Merriman knows a little bit more. But aren't there certain variations of the comics where Spider-Man isn't necessarily
There's a boy called Miles Morales, right?
A lot of people wanted Miles Morales, and when Donald Glover was talking about it, it was, you know, him being like Miles Morales, an adult version. The interesting thing is Miles is actually a lot younger than Peter in the comics, so they're kind of doing that young teenager thing, but making it Peter. When they could have made it. So the thing is about this is, like, they've made a huge mistake. They should have made a Miles in the first place. Everyone wants Miles. Even people who are diehard Spider-Man fans are sick of watching the Peter Parker origin story. Yeah. Like, it's just tedious at this point, and they all look the same. The other thing is, okay, so if they decided we don't want to do Miles because he does have a slightly different background, we want to do Peter, that's fine. Peter was, so when the Spider-Man comics were written, Peter Parker was like an outsider because he was a nerd, right? So mm-hmm. he's this outsider character. Nerdy white guys are no longer outsiders in
That's
current
a good
society.
Point.
Yeah.
So if they actually wanted to reflect the character, they would have made him like some kind of minority figure because he has to feel that sort of outsider presence.
Yeah.
Like that's a huge, huge part. That's way more important than the fact that he's white.
Right.
You know? So that's why I think a lot of people were hoping, okay, well, if they're going with Peter, at least hopefully they're taking on that aspect of his character. Yeah, the argument that, like, well, he's white in the comic, so he has to be white, like,
it's
is just,
so
that's a nothing
dumb.
Argument. It's
yeah, because
not
that's
even
like,
worth responding
if you,
to,
if you'd
honestly.
Say that, then you also have to say, oh, well, he has to have this exact shade of hair color, and he has to have this color eyes, and he has to, like, have this accent. You know, like, it's just, ugh. Boils my blood. Like.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just like super ridiculous. And I actually really like Spider-Man. I like the Spider-Man comics. I'm just over it. I'm mm-hmm. just so over it. And I think a lot of people have that same feeling of they just, it's so difficult to even try and be excited about it,
mm.
especially when they had this really great opportunity to prove that they could do something different with the Spider-Man story.
And they
when
just
they've
went
had,
generic, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Especially because they've had this criticism. I mean, they didn't have it so much with Tobey Maguire, but certainly the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man films, they had this criticism the entire time throughout about why is it another white boy? Like, why is it this same? Like, you know, as much as I loved Andrew Garfield's portrayal, that's a totally legitimate criticism. And the fact that they're going back and doing it again and they're kind of, seems like they're adopting these aspects of Miles' story, like him being a lot younger and, you know, the impact that has on him being Spider-Man, but then just absolutely refusing to, like, show that diversity on screen is kind
well,
of outrageous in a way.
You might have, and this isn't me making excuses because I still think it's dumb, but it's likely, I've read this somewhere, that they're going to make Miles a supporting character, like his friend, like, you know, his quote-unquote token best friend. I don't know where I read that. Maybe it was just like a theory, but like because Peter's so young, he's gonna need a friend. And of course there's a what's his face Harry Osborn. I'm
Harry.
Seeing James Franco in my head.
That's right, yeah.
It's Harry. Sorry, it's Harry. I was like, it's Harry.
Is that his dad?
No.
Harvey? Why no? am I thinking Harvey? Harvey?
Like,
no,
Harvey
you know,
Weinstein.
That's Batman. Yeah, that's why. It's because I just watched Batman.
Oh,
my
Harvey
bad, Dunn, guys. yeah. I was like, it's an H.
But, I mean, it's still, even if they do incorporate Miles into Peter's story, they're still saying, well, if we're going to, you know, and it's kind of like going along the Iron Man and Captain America model of saying, yeah, we have diverse people in our movies. They're not the leads. But they're there, so stop complaining, you know.
Mm. Well, that's interesting. Like, I haven't heard that rumor, but before the news broke about Asa Butterfield probably being Spider-Man, there were reports that Spider-Man was almost, like, 95% not going to be white. You know, like, that was the rumor,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
it was maybe going to be Latino, or most likely he was going to be black. And then it was like, just kidding, it's going to be
yeah.
this, like, this guy that looks like he's 14. Surprise, you know. So
right.
Most of the reports I've seen about Miles, the producers, and these are on the Sony side, so like I don't even know if they're involved anymore, but certainly around the time when Andrew Garfield was talking about his contract, because Sony kept saying, we're making more movies, and Andrew Garfield was like, well, I'm not signed on for many more. The Sony execs were saying, like, ha ha ha, we'll never do Miles Morales. Like, we will never, ever do that. People don't want to see that. So then people were like, well, Sony's the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say, like, there's been a lot of back and forth about it because people say, like, we're definitely getting diversity. And then they say, this is never, ever going to happen. So I'm taking everything with, like, a huge grain of salt until it's actually announced.
Mm. And, you know, I think it's okay that we express, I mean, I know at this point in the show, people are like, they complain about everything, but I think it's okay that we express some dissent, because we don't all, we're fans, but we don't have to just blindly love everything that Hollywood throws at us. And I think this is a good example. Not just us, but fans in general are going, really, guys? Really? This is Spider-Man? Like, really? But anyway, we'll continue to keep everyone updated on the story as it develops. There was one more piece of Spider-Man news that we just quickly want to mention, is that Deadline has reported that a couple of directors are on Sony and Marvel's shortlist for the first Spider-Man solo film. They are Ted Melfi and Jonathan Levine. And Melfi recently directed St. Vincent, with Levine directing the zombie film Warm Bodies. I gotta say, out of these two, I'm going for Levine, just because I really like Warm Bodies, and that would be like a cool angle for the Spider-Man film. But isn't it funny, like, you just hear these names, you think about the movies, and you go, okay, I know exactly what this movie's gonna be like.
Yeah, I've already seen it.
Yeah.
I am with you. I really liked 50/50 as well, that Jonathan Levine did. And yeah, I'm a huge fan of Warm Bodies. I think of the two of them, I would be leaning towards him. But yeah, it's yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like, you're like, okay, that's the aesthetic they're going for. Great.
Oh, well. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be averse to, like, a Spider-Man movie kind of in their style of Warm Bodies.
No, I think that would be really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. He has a really great touch, so
yeah,
that would be fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of directors, Jurassic World isn't out yet. It's coming out this coming week. But Jurassic Park 5, which is the planned spinoff, is already in the works. But unfortunately, Colin Trevorrow will not be back to direct that. So that's the big news on the Jurassic Park front. And he spoke about not coming back in France. And he said, Jurassic Park is like Star Wars. Different directors can give a different taste to each movie. I would be involved in some way, but not as a director. So, I mean, it kind of just sounds like they're going the like the Harry Potter route, or even the Twilight route, or kind of any franchise that's around right now, where they're gonna start switching up directors and stuff like that. And that's usually, like, it's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing, you know, because if you really, really like the movie, it kind of sucks because you don't get the same person coming back for another. But at the same time, it also gives us all a different way to kind of experience the worlds that we love. So,
and if it's not Steven Spielberg, you know.
yeah, definitely. But yeah, that's pretty much it. There's not very much else to that story, just that he's not coming back, unless you guys have any really, you know, strong opinions on whether or not this is good.
I just feel like it doesn't matter so much with an action movie.
No.
You know? Like, yeah. I kind of see these as, like, James Bond movies. You know, they all have different directors. Well, a lot of them have different directors. And it kind of doesn't matter, because they're not expecting that you've seen every Jurassic Park movie, you're going to be able to come in and watch it, versus something like Harry Potter that has an underpinning narrative. So it's still going to be a Jurassic Park movie. Like, there's going to be dinosaurs eating people and running away, and it's going to be all of those things, and they're going to play the song, and it'll be great. Like,
yeah,
it'll be fine.
And I think, you know, Colin Trevorrow was so recently, or so relatively unknown in Hollywood before he did this. He's probably hoping this will kind of launch his career, and we're certainly hoping that as well. And who knows, maybe the next Jurassic World will launch someone else's career. Maybe they'll pick one of us, guys. Who knows?
Start putting your
time
hat
to
yeah, no. try to plan those new dinosaurs.
Yeah, all right. Yep. Start writing that screenplay or your pitch or whatever.
I'm thinking along the lines of Denver, The Last Dinosaur. I just took myself out of the running.
Yeah, I think so. All right, more non-news, but maybe more exciting. We had the first poster for Mockingjay Part 2, and, I mean, everyone must know at this point my, like, huge obsession with The Hunger Games, but also my huge obsession with their promotional team, because they kill it. They have done such an amazing job, and especially for Catching Fire and Mockingjay Part 1, and we're all just, like, waiting for a trailer finally. But at least we got a poster, and it's kind of amazing. It's the statue of President Snow that we saw from Mockingjay Part 1, but he's had his head smashed off, and the statue is all crumbling, and the Mockingjay symbol is graffitied behind him on the wall, and I'm just getting emotional even looking at it. really exciting for me. Am I crazy, or do you guys also enjoy it?
Oh, a little crazy. No, my favorite thing about going to Comic-Con since like The Hunger Games was a thing is seeing all the cool stuff that they bring, and yes, get all the free posters, and yeah, so it looks really cool. I'm totally with you on that, and their ad campaign is always great. So
yeah,
very fun stuff.
They do such a great job. So hopefully, mm-hmm, this means that we will be getting a trailer, like some kind of video, or yeah, yeah. I mean, last time they did those like addresses, you know, Snow like addressed the Capitol and Panem, I guess. So maybe this time we'll get one from like District 13 instead. I don't know. It'll be exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of, maybe they're doing some kind of like, no one realized, but it's actually a really clever, like, sort of radio silence campaign. Like, oh, the communication is down. Nothing's getting out of Pan Am. That's why there's no trailer.
Yeah. Well, it's actually... I mean,
that'd be interesting.
It is actually, like, I know you're joking, but it is kind of working because everyone's like, where's the Mockingjay trailer?
Yeah, right.
They're playing hard to get.
We've only got a couple more months. I wonder if they're just going to debut it.
Yeah.
At Comic-Con.
Maybe. Oh my God. I mean, if they do, I will have an aneurysm. Like, I will fall down dead on the street.
Andrew and I are going to be there with a pail and a mop because you'll just be a pile of goo.
I will. It's like, not even an exaggeration.
Yeah, I don't know how to transition from pile of goo to this next story, but I think it's... That would be weird. Wonder Woman is another movie that's coming up that we're excited about over at DC. And early this week, this was one of the first stories that went into the doc. It's kind of old at this point. Chris Pine, action hero extraordinaire, is apparently in talks to be the love interest of Wonder Woman, who is, of course, played by Gal Gadot. He'll be playing Steve Trevor, who in the comics was an intelligence officer in the U.S. Army during World War II, whose plane crashed on Paradise Island, which is where the Wonder Woman race, I suppose, lives, the Amazons. And he's nursed back to health, sort of Pocahontas style, I guess. I don't know. I haven't read this. And by this, you know, Wonder Woman Diana, and she ends up falling in love with him, and she follows him when he returns to Earth, and that's how she sort of ends up being Wonder Woman. I guess that's great. Chris Pine is great, and another Chris playing Steve is, you can never go wrong with that, I guess.
It's a tried and true formula. The best thing about this is the top comment on this article is someone who says, oh no, if he joins DC, then Marvel will be so devastated they'll never be able to complete their Chris collection. It's like so the accurate. Seriously. Oh no, they've got three already.
They do. That's right. Chris Pratt.
They've got Pratt. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. How could I forget Chris Pratt?
But only white Chris's. That's all they're interested in. Because I had to take this back there.
Can we get a black Chris?
Chris Rock?
Chris Rock.
Chris Rock stars in Wonder Woman.
Wow. They should have just cast Chris Rock as Falcon. And then we would have had...
As everyone.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. True. So true.
But I mean, do you guys... What do you guys actually think of this?
I haven't read the comics with Steve in them, so I'm not like, don't really have an opinion either way, but I like Chris Pine, and I'm excited to hear more news from Wonder Woman, because mm-hmm. it means like it's almost definitely going to happen. Like, the more casting I go, okay, great, that means they can't pull out of it this time,
right.
So that's fine. And I mean, it's, you know, hardly even seen any, we haven't seen Gal Gadot like do anything yet, so mm-hmm. I'm still more interested in like how she is going to be playing Wonder Woman, and the other is just filler.
And part of me is like vaguely like disappointed, like, oh, it's going to be another love interest. But then I'm thinking, well, at least this time it's, you know, a guy, and she's going to be more powerful, and subverting some stereotypes.
It's very I Dream of Jeannie, though, you know, this whole storyline. No, I Dream of Jeannie. Nobody.
Yeah, I get it. Do you even know what that show is?
No.
Have you had
that? Oh. I'm just like,
So this, he's like, he's kind of like in the Navy too, and he winds up like washed up on a random shore, and he finds this lamp, and Jeannie is in there, and so she saves him. Yeah. It's big in the 60s.
They do a lot of reruns of it. you know what, that's a good point, which I hadn't even thought about. It kind of would have been nice to have a Wonder Woman movie without a love interest, but I hope the great thing about Wonder Woman is, like, I mean, even if you are not a fan of the comics, you may have seen various panels from them floating around the internet, because she's just so much sass and so amazing. And, you know, she's always saying, like, you know, people say, oh, like, but I need to, like, save this man, and, oh, what if he leaves me, whatever. She's like, men cannot possibly be that important to you.
That's true.
She has all these, like, lines like that. So as long as all of that aspect of her character is, like, preserved, then I'm fine with the love interest. You know, it will be an issue, obviously, if, like, her characterization is sacrificed so that they can make the love story a huge part of the film. But, again, it's, like, all speculation.
To be honest with you, I don't think that they could do that, because she comes from a land that's pretty much all women. So to
I have faith they can destroy any female character at this point. Like, I'm
forever like the optimist over here.
Yeah, you know, it's tough being this positive, guys.
Well, if we're ready to move on,
Let's talk about something starring a guy. Jesus.
Yeah, speaking of feminism, oh no.
Well, it's going to have a field day with this one. Well, of course, if you're a fan of 50 Shades of Grey, this is great news. If you fit with great the fiery news. Passion, then you're just kind of.
Sorry.
Anyway, let's get down to it. So E.L. James just announced that she is releasing another installment of her popular series. And it's pretty much just 50 Shades of Grey told through Grey's perspective. And it is
Stephanie Meyer should be ashamed.
I'm actually kind of out about this, because I had my little stint with Twilight back in the day. And I really enjoyed Midnight Sun. Like, I don't know if any of you guys have to read it, but for those listeners that have, I mean, you'll know that it was actually really good. It's probably better than Twilight.
But she never released the final version, right?
It was just such a fun read. No, she didn't. Actually, and so this is really funny. So she released it because her Edward point of view Twilight was leaked online. So she just decided to release the 15 chapters that she had written on her website. It was put on hold indefinitely, but, like, fans are never going to get it, so everybody's just kind of stopped holding their breath. So in contrast, I guess E.L. James was really smart, because she announced Grey about 2 weeks before the book's going to be released. So it's actually coming out June 18th of this month, which is also Christian Grey's birthday. So,
wow. I did not realize
that. She must have been sitting on this for a while. And according to what we have up on Hypebible.com, which will give you a lot more details as to what you can expect from this, it's 567 pages long.
Oh my
and
God.
That's longer than 50 Shades of Grey. So you'll get a very good look as to just how messed up Christian is when you pick this up in about
it's
2 weeks.
570 pages too long, in my opinion.
You know what? Honestly, I mean, I'm not going to read this because I have no interest in 50 Shades of Grey, but I do think that this is really, like Pam's saying, I think this is actually a really great thing for fans of the series, and also just in general, because when you're reading 50 Shades of Grey, like, or watching the movie, I assume you're sort of, you know, you're watching everything through Anna's eyes, and you're sort of, she is a bit of a Mary Sue, and she is sort of a bit of a, like, everything happens to her. And I think actually seeing how E.L. James handles Christian's perspective in Midnight Sun sort of will give us a really good indication of how, you know, how capable she actually is of a writer, because his perspective is a lot more complicated, and it's very different writing about someone who has this mindset and actually writing from their point of view. And I think,
did
like...
Did you just call it Midnight Sun?
Oh, did I? Oh, my God. Midnight my Sun mind is...
I mean, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it is basically the same thing. Much. But I'm just saying, like I know that this is still... Like, people still sort of put this down because it's basically, like, a glorified fanfic. And I... Look, I'm totally on board with fanfic. I think if you can write something good and publish it, then by all means, go for it. But it... I mean, I think... I don't know. I think if she had released this before 50 Shades of Grey, like, it might have been... Like, there's just more depth to it. There's more darkness. There's more potential for it to be interesting, you know, as a, as an exercise in... I'm giving her way too much credit, I know that, but like, as an exercise in some psychology and an insight into this world that most people cannot for the life of them understand. And it's so much easier to go into it from Anna's point of view than from his. So I don't know. I'm not going to read it, but I'm going to look forward to the reviews. I hope people give it a chance.
I can't deal with this. I need a, like, just give me like a minute to complain about this and then we can move on. Okay. But like, okay, right. this is a problem with 50 Shades of Grey, which I unfortunately had to read. I took one for the team to write a review of it earlier this year. And the problem with 50 Shades of Grey is not that it's like glorified fan fiction. That's fine. Like, write whatever you want to write. If you can get a book deal with your fanfic, props to you. Mm-hmm. The problem with 50 Shades of Grey is that it promotes emotionally and sexually abusive relationships, and there's literally a rape scene in it that I'm sure she is now going to spend 576 pages attempting to justify.
If she does that, if she justifies it, that's a whole other can of worms. But if, like,
it's not even that, though. Like, it's never addressed again in the book. Like, The problem with the way that she presents it is, like, as a reader, well, certainly me, I was reading this being like, okay, I'm terrified of this guy. Like, this is a terrible relationship. Get out of it. The way that she constructs the story, you're meant to feel bad for him and, like, try and fix him. You know, he's really the main character, even though it's told through Anna's perspective. So it's only going to get worse when you see it from his perspective. And I'm certainly not going to be giving her any of my money. And, you know, if people are fans of 50 Shades, like, that's fine. I don't understand why you would be, but, like, everyone likes their own stuff. But you still have to be aware of the problematic aspects of it. You know, there's no way you can read that first book and be like, that's totally fine. Like, that's a normal relationship. And you also can't read books like that and think incredibly naively that it doesn't inform the way that we see the world or, like, the way that we view other people. And that's like the issue with these books. It's not like they're poorly written, fine, I don't care, read whatever. I thought Twilight was poorly written, but there wasn't a rape scene in it as far as I'm concerned, so, like, it's already doing better, you know.
But I mean, yeah, I think you're absolutely 100% right. But as for people that are fans of it, you know.
Well, then I'm sure they'll love this, and I will continue to not understand them as human beings. Right. So,
and as a final note, I'm just going to take this moment to say, if you haven't read Midnight Sun, you should just go read that, because it's free and it's up on Stephanie Meyer's website, and it's actually really funny. Like, it's really funny. Edward is really stoic in Twilight for the most
Edward
part.
Edward is such a fail. Like,
but he has so much personality in Midnight Sun, and I'm just like, you guys, I'm just really bummed out that this was never actually made into a real book.
Like, Pam is Midnight Sun like the Twilight fans encyclopedia? It's like the one thing that they all want, but they're never gonna get.
I guess like, so. I don't know. Maybe everyone's over it, but this news about Grey has just reminded me that it was such a fun little read, and then Stephanie Meyer had to go have a cow about it being leaked and then never finished it. Like, she was like barely halfway done. Mm-hmm. She totally could have finished it and like made all this money from it.
That.
She did forever. Like, she's still sulking.
I know.
Come on, Stephanie.
It's kind of
yeah, I mean, you know, say what you will about E.L. James, and like, I can say a lot, but it's a really smart business move. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really clever move, what she's doing. So
absolutely.
And so clearly she learned from her idol Stephanie's mistake, because she just did not say anything about this.
Yeah.
Until she was ready to publish. She probably didn't sell it, tell a soul. Anyway, we can move on now.
Yeah.
We're done.
Are we done? So
I keep going.
Like. I know you can. We're like halfway through the news and an hour in, so let's speed up this stuff. So our next story, this is interesting. The news story is Sofia Coppola drops out of The Little Mermaid. I read this going, she was attached to the Little Mermaid? What? I totally missed that she was. So apparently Universal is doing a live action adaptation of the Little Mermaid, not the Disney version of the Little Mermaid, but Hans Christian Andersen's original fairy tale. And by the way, caution to anyone who, like, this is a terrible story. This is the most depressing thing you will ever read in your life. So it's kind of interesting that Hollywood is finally tackling that version of The Little Mermaid as opposed to the family-friendly Disney one. But so Sofia Coppola was attached to direct, and everyone was super excited about it. Earlier this week, we found out that she has dropped out of the project due to creative differences, which is never a good sign. And worrying, because creative differences in general means the studio wouldn't let me have the freedom that I wanted to tell the story that I wanted to tell. So,
yeah,
bad news for Little Mermaid hopefuls. But there you go.
I also did not know that she was attached to this. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
But I think I really like her directing style, even though I don't, it's weird. I don't like all of her movies, but I think, like, visually they are so beautiful. So it would have been really interesting to see what she did with this, because it's, as you said, super dark, mm-hmm. the Hans Christian Andersen, and, like, just really gross.
Yes.
And a lot of her movies are kind of fun and upbeat, and, you know, it would have been an interesting one for her to do, but... I mean, do I need a live-action Little Mermaid film? Probably not, but
no.
Yeah, we'll get one, so.
We'll probably get a few.
Yeah, is this the only one in development? That's
I'm
weird.
Sure Disney's going to do crazy. One.
How? It's just... Oh,
I know, wasn't Stephanie Meyer going to write a book about mermaids? I feel like there's mermaids. A connection here we could have made.
Pam? Tell us, Pam.
That all I know is that she said that she had a couple projects in the works and she was contemplating doing a story about time traveling mermaids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Although that also never came to fruition. So
damn it, Stephanie.
I just don't know what Stephanie. I had so much, like, we had this trusting relationship, and now I just don't know what to believe anymore. Mm. So
maybe she wrote all of the 50 Shades books under a pen name, and E.L. James is just an actress that she has hired to
perfect.
Pay her. Because has she written anything since 50 Shades has come out? I don't think so.
The Host.
Oh,
I
who
love
remembers
the host.
That?
I love
not
that
since
book.
50 Shades
it's so
came
good.
Out.
But yeah.
No, that was, see, that was pre. It was pre 50
that,
Shades.
That was
anyway.
Pre. Yeah. Anyway, that yeah. was Stephanie Meyer. But you know what? If E.L. James writes a book about time-traveling mermaids, then we'll know the truth.
We'll know. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I guess I can't complain about everything. Let me be excited for approximately 15 seconds. We had the first promo for the new Daily Show. Of course, unfortunately, Jon Stewart is leaving us, but we are getting Trevor Noah in his place. And they released the first promo. And although, like, when Jon Stewart leaves in August, it will rip my heart out of my body, this actually looks really good.
Yeah,
and
it does.
I think he looks good behind the desk, and I'm excited to see the direction that he takes it. And I'm wondering if, like, this means it's going to be a kind of a little younger, like they're aiming for a little younger vibe to the show. But I don't care. Jon Stewart is gone, and my life is over.
But you'll get a new life with this guy.
Yeah, I think he looks good.
He'll be fine.
I think he looks... It's encouraging because people are stressed about it, so it's nice.
For sure.
So we got some more TV news for you guys. I'm really excited about this story, and I think it's really cool Fox to do this. Prison Break is coming back for a one-off kind of mini fourth season.
That's crazy.
Which
this
is just
news broke like
super
hours
cool.
ago.
I know. I was so excited. I told Selena I need to talk about this on the show. I loved Prison Break when it was on, and it's a really fun show. If you guys are really into that kind of psychological, like, type things, then you should definitely check this out. Pretty much what happens is that Wentworth Miller's character, actually, it's really funny because Wentworth Miller and Dominic Purcell, this was like their first stint together, and now they're on The Flash. So I kind of had a mini aneurysm when they got cast as brothers on The Flash, and they had played brothers on Prison Break. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So pretty much Wentworth Miller gets himself arrested so that he can break his brother out of jail because he was committed for a crime that he didn't do. And the series just kind of goes from there. And it's a really good show. All three seasons of the show are actually on Netflix. So if you guys need something to marathon, you should go check that out. But yes, the important thing about this story is that Fox is going to release about 12 episodes of it. So they're kind of going to do the same thing that they did with the 24 revival, where it kind of they aired another season over the summer, and Prison Break's going to get the same treatment. And it's, yeah, it's definitely exciting news for fans like me. So, yeah.
For sure. I'm glad we got this into the show.
I know, me too.
And it's nice to hear that you're so excited about a revival, because there's so many of them. And
I just think it's such a cool idea for shows that, like, especially like Prison Break, like, there was only three seasons. Like, it was cut too soon. So it's kind of cool that they're able to do this now, or that shows kind of get treatments like this. Like, there's the possibility for a second life, and that's just really awesome. Yeah. I love that.
That is cool.
I like that too.
All right, so next story is we're kind of switching course here. Ha! Course! So Rutgers University is introducing an interesting new, course, which compares John Green's books to classic literature. That course is titled The Fault in Our Fiction. And I like that. I'm a sucker for these stupid puns. It'll be taught by assistant associate professor of English Brad Evans, who will be comparing books like Pride and Prejudice, like classic literature, to John Green's five published novels. And basically the aim of this course is to... 'cause a lot of people have been saying, you know, why is John Green getting a course? Like, he's only written a couple of books, and like, they're great, but they're not maybe literature, like, study-worthy. But actually, what I think is really cool about this is that Evans is saying that The Fault in Our Fiction, the title of the course, refers to the misconception that fiction doesn't matter. And he says some people like to dismiss John Green novels as just young adult fiction, but fiction shapes our lives more deeply than we often acknowledge. I feel like this could almost be like the slogan of Hypebol. Like, guys, you know, pop culture matters.
Yes.
It's so easy to dismiss.
This should have come after the 50 Shades story.
Yeah, it should, actually. But it's so easy to dismiss stuff for being poppy and for being directed at young people and for being like kind of like sensational and what people don't realize. I mean, I've studied this at university. I would totally take this course because I think it's about so much more than just John Green. I think it's about the notion that a lot of people sort of like to think that they're above popular fiction, and they like to dismiss it as irrelevant. And the more you dismiss something as irrelevant, the more power you give it to influence people, because they let themselves consume it without filter. Like, you know, like, speaking of something like reality TV, it's so dangerous because we're bombarded with it all the time, and we're also being told it's fine, it doesn't matter, it doesn't influence our lives, it's pointless, it's just entertainment. And so we consume it, and we consume it, and we consume it, and we have no critical thought about what we're consuming whatsoever. And then I kind of feel like that's sort of what's being touched on here. So that idea is nice, and I think we need more courses like that, because we can't just study Jane Austen and pretend like that's what's going to influence our lives, and YA is not, because we're going to read six YA books for every classic story, you know, if that... So that's what I think.
I would have loved a class, like, not necessarily like completely John Green focused, but when I was in university, I always wished I could have taken a class on just like young adult fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that is so necessary and also relevant for people today. And I mean, like, and my whole thing is like, if I can take a class on James Bond, like, why can't I take a class about young adult fiction? So I think this is really cool. And like, you know, Beyonce has a course now, and Harry Potter courses run amok. So why not John Green? And he's got a wonderful message, and his books are super relatable. And yeah.
And they influence young kids and older kids, you know, every kid, kids of all ages, you know, he influences them legitimately.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I totally agree with everything you said, Selena. And I would also add that what I like about things like this, and again, doesn't have to be John Green specific, but just in terms of like popular young adult fiction, is by saying that it's worthy of consideration, I guess. What you're saying is, like, you're breaking down that kind of elitist standard that applies really arbitrarily to things that we have deemed to be classics and things that we have not. So what frustrates me the most about young adult fiction is that it's held to this, like, weird standard that adult fiction or, like, you know, other fiction is not held to. You know, people expect all young adult fiction to be all amazing and all, you know, thought-provoking, whatever. And it's like, well, we don't judge all adult fiction by, like, the Da Vinci Code. Yeah. So, you know, so, like, that standard has always frustrated me. And, you know, John Green, like, there are some great things about his books and there are some things I don't like about his books. And that's the same with Jane Austen. That's the same with, like, Charles Dickens and everyone. So I like the idea that, you know, as you say, like, you're examining things that we would otherwise just think don't have any influence over our lives when they obviously do. And I also really like the idea of kind of maybe introducing people to books that they may not have read otherwise, because the idea of this, like, classic literature canon can be quite intimidating to people. So if you can say, like, well, read this book that you've probably already read, like, read The Fault in Our Stars, and then read this Jane Austen book that maybe you would not normally pick up because you'll be able to see these same aspects in it, I think that's such a great way to introduce people to, like, a much broader range of books than they usually would read. So what this is telling me is that I should have gone to university in America.
Yes.
Because, like, we don't have any of these classes. Okay, so still keeping on influential people in pop culture this week. See what I did there? Thanks, Pam, for setting that up. Bruce Jenner has revealed Caitlyn Jenner, the beautiful Vanity Fair cover with the headline "Call Me Caitlyn." As you said in the docs, Lena, it would be nice if we live somewhere where, like, someone saying "I'm transgender" and, like, "This is who I'm choosing to live my life as" wouldn't be a big deal, but it obviously is a big deal. And I think overall she has had a really positive reaction from people, so that's fantastic. You know, people like Drake Bell say dumb things and then people say, "Who's Drake Bell?" So that is great. But there was something interesting I just wanted to add to this that Laverne Cox wrote about it, and she stars on Orange is the New Black. And she was writing that, you know, like, it's obviously fantastic that Caitlyn is having this reaction and that everyone's being so accepting, but Laverne and now Caitlyn are very, like, quote-unquote feminine. You know, they kind of embrace the very, like, traditional beauty requirements for women. And so, you know, she just hopes that if someone was like, "I'm transgender and I define myself less, you know, feminine, as it were," that people would be equally as accepting. So just something good to keep in mind. But the pictures are beautiful. And I love the cover.
For sure. Great story. And yeah, as I said, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but, you know, as I said on Twitter as well, I mean, it's fantastic. It's really, like, the fact that people are so talking so much about this, like, at first I was like, why are we talking, like, why why is this such a big deal? She's just a woman now, like, that's the end. But obviously it's fantastic that here's this extremely public figure, who knew that the Kardashians would end up making such a positive impact, and people are having these conversations now, and so much love and support is pouring out for Caitlyn Jenner. And I just think it's important that this happens.
I do want to add too that I think that it's not just necessarily, like, a conversation that, like, our generation is having, but, like, for people like my mom, like, we talked a lot about this because my mom was born in 1963, so she's familiar with Bruce Jenner, who Caitlyn used to be, because of his Olympic glory. And so I think that for maybe older people where, like, transgender stuff was even more taboo than it is for our generation, like, it also opens up the floor to have really good conversations about why we should be respectful and accepting of this particular lifestyle. So yeah, it's an interesting situation all around, and yeah, all the more power to her for being strong enough to not only make the transition but also make it so publicly.
For sure.
Yeah, I think it ties into, like, some of the other stuff we've talked about today about, you know, the culture, our pop culture and the media and things around us definitely inform our worldviews. So, you know, when it's a really positive reaction like this, that's really encouraging.
Mm-hmm. And the final story?
This is so exciting, you guys. The Wizarding World, Harry Potter. I was so excited that I just omitted a complete word from my sentence. The Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Southern California finally has a set opening date, so it will be coming to the Hollywood Burbank area. Well, the Hollywood area, it's actually Universal Studios is located in Burbank in the spring of 2016. So we have about a year before that opens up in California. And I will just say that I was over at Universal Studios for the San Andreas stuff that I talked about earlier in the show. And it is so cool because you can now see Hogwarts. Like, not only on your drive up, which Andrew mentions in his article, but you can also see it from certain points in City Walk. So even if you're not in the actual theme park and you just, and you just want to go, like, to City Walk and, like,
there.
What? we can go. And it's,
we're going
on. It's so cool.
Take me to Hogwarts. Wow.
Yes, you can see it. And it's, like, it's a full-fledged Hogwarts, like, oh, man, it's so cool. I'm so excited. And, so we also have a couple of interesting little tidbits about what you guys can expect when you visit the West Coast version of the theme park. One of the things that's going to be different is that the Forbidden Journey ride, which of course originated in Universal Orlando, is actually going to be in 3D. So that's something that's going to be a little bit different from the original theme park, as opposed to the one that they'll be opening over here in Southern California next year. And the world will also house Universal Hollywood's first outdoor roller coaster, which is Flight of the Hippogriff. And then, of course, they'll have all the mainstay shops that everybody that's visited the Orlando theme park has come to know and love. So you'll get Honeydukes, Ollivander's, the Outpost, Thunko's Joke Shop, and all that other good stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely an exciting time to be a Potter fan if you are living in California or you are planning to vacation here next year. That's all I have to say about that.
I would kind of hope that it would have something different. Like, I like that the Japan one has the lake, you know? Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, I guess it's nice in a way because you can go to either and it's the same, but it's also really sad that you can go to either and it's the same.
Although, you know, I had this thought too, and then I'm wondering if they did it on purpose so that in a year or two they can expand and do something that is unique just to the California location. Like, I feel like that would be a really good way to kind of bring people back to the park and entice them to, you know, go multiple times, not necessarily just open like a Diagon Alley expansion like they have in Orlando, because I don't think they really have the space for it in Universal Studios Hollywood. Because the thing about Universal Studios Hollywood is that it's a working set. Like, not a working set, but it's a working studio. So they don't have a lot of space to expand because half of the space that they're on is just studio lot. So if you come out and say you go to a taping of The Voice, like, that is behind the theme park because that's the studio. Whereas in Orlando, they have space to kind of roam because they don't have to section off certain areas to kind of make room for filming and whatnot. So I guess it just remains to be seen if they'll be able to expand at all or if this is just going to be it. But either way, you know, it's exciting. Like, maybe if you live on the West Coast and you can't afford to go to Orlando, at least you can come down and experience the magic for yourself.
Cool.
Yay.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Bookended uplifting. By Harry Potter.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, of course. That's perfect.
As it should be.
Wonderful uplifting way to end the news. So this week was super busy and we actually had a bunch of other stories all up and hypeable that we didn't get a chance to discuss in depth. Some of these include Tilda Swinton might star opposite David Tennant in Doctor Strange. Andy Serkis's character in Star Wars The Force Awakens has been revealed. Pixar has released the Good Dinosaur trailer. Oh, I was so close to making our roundup, but it didn't. And this morning, actually, there was a rumor that the second anthology movie will feature Boba Fett and Han Solo, a younger Han Solo, which I think people would just absolutely love. So if this happens, if this is confirmed, we'll 100% be talking about it. Don't worry. So you can check out all those news and way more stories on hypable.com, which is hypable.com.
I feel like I need to just jump in before someone in the comments says that I think you meant Benedict Cumberbatch instead of David Tennant in Doctor Strange. Although I can see how you confuse them.
What am I thinking of? What's David Tennant?
He's going to be a doctor in Jessica Jones on Netflix.
Jessica Jones. Oh my god, yeah. You guys. It's all the same thing. So many things.
This is why you keep me around.
This is why, yes, I could not, literally could not do this without you for this very reason. Thank you, Merrimeth, for saving us that. Jesus Christ, there's comic stories everywhere. Who knew that this was going to come back to bite me that I never read a comic book? All right.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Let's move along to something that I should be more, have more knowledge about, which is television. So TV show of the week. This week, we're going to start off with Pam because, of course, the biggest sort of TV development was the Outlander season finale. Did it live up to your expectations?
Yes, it was amazing, but also tragic, but also it needed to be tragic, to be truthful to the book. And I don't know how much I'm allowed, well, not like what I'm allowed to say, like obviously I could say anything, but just in case somebody hasn't seen it yet, I don't want to spoil anything, but it definitely is tough to watch. If you had trouble watching kind of the torture scene that we got about 2 weeks ago, then this is definitely way worse. It's very much along the lines of maybe something that just happened in Game of Thrones. If you were upset about that, you might be upset about this. But if you have watched the episode, I will say that Laura, who is the head Outlander writer, she did a really good job covering this. And I think Merima is going to talk about an article that she covered later on in the show. So overall, it was a really good kind of end to an awesome first season, and I, like the rest of the Outland fans, are just all the more excited for season two. So
cool. Yeah. So Merima last week watched the Supergirl leaked pilot. This I watched it a few days later, actually, and I loved it. I thought it was adorable.
Yay!
She's adorable. The story was really great. Nothing like so out of the ordinary. Getting a very strong, like, it's just so cool to see her be like so excited about her powers. I think that's like the main thing. The scene
when she sees herself on the news and she's like jumping up and down, yes. I think is my favorite scene in the pilot.
Yeah, because it's so refreshing. Who has not done that? Seeing themselves in the news, yeah.
I mean, done something exciting and be like, oh my god! Like, that's her reaction instead of being dark and broody and like, oh, I'm that's like depressed the biggest, about my powers.
Exactly, that's like the biggest thing about is that Supergirl is like in no way apologetic about her powers, and she's in no way going, oh, you know, it's so hard for me that I'm this strong woman. She's just like, point me towards crime. I'm going for it. Awesome. Really awesome. And James Olsen, that romance is budding, and I approve. So very, mm-hmm. very cool. Very, very, very cool. I also just really quickly want to plug the Unreal pilot. Unreal had its on Lifetime. It had its season or series premiere this Monday. Very, very, very good. Especially if you're sort of like me or kind of tired of reality television and tired of people thinking it's real, please watch this and know that even though this is fiction, it's actually real.
Can you explain what it is?
Sherry Appleby? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Okay. Of Roswell fame.
Of Roswell, exactly. Right.
Yeah, cool. But no, this is basically, it's takes place, the characters, it's fiction, it's a drama, but it takes place behind the set of a reality show. So this, and it's actually, if you've read The Selection, there's some kind of parallels there that are kind of interesting by Kiara Cass. But so we follow this producer of a reality show as they're like setting up. It's like a Bachelor kind of show. And we meet all the girls and we see like how all of the events are 100% manipulated, and you sort of follow these producers who are really bad people who are trying to make the contestants get certain reactions out of them. And Shiri Appleby's character is like the worst one. She's so morally corrupt, but it's great. And it's just really great because from the very beginning, you're like, you see a scene that you would see in any reality show, And then you cut to behind the camera, and they're like, no, 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 this doesn't work. She's black. We can't have a black woman like the friend. We are like, whoa, what? But then they just carry on this horrible conversation about how, like, no, no, the first one they introduce always has to be white, and it's not my fault that America's racist. And she just goes on, and it's like, oh, it's like a refreshing shot of reality about reality television that isn't real.
And it sounds amazing.
It's amazing. And it's so hard to watch. Like, it's so uncomfortable because, like, it's also manipulated. And, like, if you know, like, you know, if you, like, have any kind of, like, awareness, you know that everything you see on television is manipulated. Like, nothing. The more random it seems, the more manipulated it is. We talked about this for Eurovision last week. And it's just so nice to see a show sort of go completely unapologetically going, these people are pigs, and this is what's really going on. And obviously, again, it's all fiction, so it's not actually what's really going on, but it is. I don't know. You have
to
watch it. It's
very meta.
Is that, it is. I also want to talk a little bit, because it's not really like Hypeable's demographic, but Entourage, the movie, is coming to theaters this week, and I was a really big fan of that show when it first aired on HBO, but it's very similar in the sense that, like, it's kind of, like, if you sit back and think about it, it's just a really disgusting portrayal of Hypeable. It's a disgusting portrayal of Hollywood.
The
but
truth
it's not
is revealed.
It's not far from the truth. So if you look at it in that way, it's also very interesting to watch in that respect. But I'm really glad that you liked Unreal, because I remember when Lifetime ordered the series, and the summary that they gave didn't really sound very good. So I'm glad to hear that it's an enjoyable watch, because I will be checking it out now, thanks
you
to your
definitely should. Everyone should. It's yeah. really good.
I you think should review good. It, Selena.
Yes, I posted on Hypeable, and no one
I know, and I just
replied
remembered
to me.
So I'm telling you now, live on Hype.
I got my justice, yes. Great, yeah. I will do that.
Okay, well, I kind of have a TV of the week, sort of. This is in anticipation, because Hannibal starts back this week, and I really love Hannibal, but I have to admit that I'm only halfway through the second season, because even shows that I really love, I have trouble keeping up with. Guys, it's just really hard. But yeah, Hannibal season 3 is airing on Thursday, 4th of June. It airs on NBC. Don't be put off by the fact that it airs on NBC. It's like so amazing. It's the showrunner's Brian Fuller, who did Pushing Daisies. And it stars Mads Mikkelsen and Hugh Dancy, and it's so creepy and so gross and so visually stunning and just weird and crazy, and it's continually called like one of the best shows on TV by critics for a reason. So yeah, definitely check that out, and we'll be covering Hannibal fully on Hypeable going forward season 3, so
oh, cool.
You'll have all the recaps and news and everything. So yeah. Exciting times, but I'm excited for that, and I will finish watching season 2, and then I will start watching season 3.
Awesome. Cool. That's the end of the TV section. It was fast.
Yeah, we're racing now.
Racing to
okay.
the finish.
It's time for Hot on Hypeable, and I tell you what's hot on Hypeable. This week, more quizzes. We told you last week about our personality quizzes that we have started doing on Hypeable. So we're going to have a lot of those going forward. This week we have Which Olsen Sister Are You? Which I feel like we should take, because we didn't even know which one was which.
Well, I took it. I was Elizabeth. I felt that okay. was appropriate. I know who she is.
Yeah, I got her as well.
I was going to say, if I, you know what, looking at the picture of them, like, I could totally tell you who is who. I'm uh-huh. not happy. But this also comes from my obsession with Mary-Kate and Ashley when I was younger. Like, my mom was like, this is a for you guys to watch. Like, so you guys can watch. Like, they had so many DVDs and stuff like that. So, but maybe that's just me.
No, I watched that twin movie at camp. I watched that, like, every Friday for 5 years.
Oh, I'm talking about, like, Mary-Kate and Ashley sleepover and... Like,
what twin movie at
So Little Time.
Trap? No, no, the one that's like The Parent Trap, but with the Olsen twins.
Oh, because I was like, you know, the Olsen twins are not in The Parent Trap.
No, 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 the two girls. I don't know, I only know the title in Danish. But they ate some really cool food that I... Anyway, this is not important. We're trying
anyway,
to finish the show.
I'm shocked. It is because I'm shocked I've never seen it.
It's so good, guys. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so you can take that quiz and find out, first of all, which Olsen twin is which, and then which one you are. So that's exciting. And we also have, in honor of Mad Max, which Tom Hardy character are you? And this is really fun because Tom Hardy has played the weirdest combination of characters. Like, he doesn't even look like himself in any of these roles. So that's a very fun one to take. And then you can share. People are having a... lots of discussion in the comments about why am I this one? And like, what about this one? So yeah, check that out. And we'll have a lot more of like those kinds of quizzes going forward. So you can keep an eye out for them. Also this week, Paper Towns, we had the new trailer, which we didn't talk about, but also Hypeable was on the set of Paper Towns like last year. So we can finally release our set report, which is very exciting, including interviews with John Green and a look at what filming is like and some of the little hidden Easter eggs and all of those kinds of things. So definitely check that out if you are a Paper Towns or John Green fan. Other exclusives, I was at, I think I mentioned last week, I was at this like young adult conference over the weekend and I got to speak to some authors there. I spoke to Amy Kaufman, who wrote the Starbound books, which start with these broken stars. And we talked about like this really cool technique she has when she writes her books, that she writes the book and then she goes to every single secondary character and like flips the gender and then sees, you know, why does it work like this or why doesn't it work like this? And yeah, read the article. That's a fun time. And then also we spoke to some authors about the We Need Diverse Books campaign, and they all had some very it's nice to talk about authors because they always phrase things very well, so like they have some very nicely phrased answers about why we still need diverse books, particularly in young adult fiction. So all of those exclusives on Hypeable. And then I just wanted to give a shout out to Laura, as Pam mentioned earlier. Laura is one of our writers, and she writes about Outlander. Because the finale just aired, Laura wrote this really fantastic, very well-considered article about some of the issues that Pam alluded to. And I don't want to spoil it, but definitely read that. But she has written these for every single episode this season. Mm-hmm. So if you are like missing Outlander or you want to like go and continue the conversation about Outlander, I would definitely recommend you go back through the Outlander category on Hypeable and check out some of Laura's articles, because they are all like really insightful and just very objective. And Outlander deals with a lot of issues that a lot of other shows don't deal with. And that was especially clear in the finale. So, yeah, definitely just wanted to give a shout out to those because they have all been fantastic.
Great. Awesome. Well, you can check out all of those on hypeable.com. Heading on to the comments, listener feedback really quickly, and we'll be out of here. The first comment comes from Kat Smith on Twitter. She says, I watched The Craft for the first time because you were excited for a potential remake. That movie is so bad, I don't get it. I think this
would
kind
just
of been the start
like
of
to
thing.
Be clear that I don't even know what The Craft is.
No,
so that
I
was
don't
definitely
either.
Not my fault. Blame Pam.
I would just like to say that maybe just had to be there when it was a thing.
I think
the 90s.
So. It's one of those things.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I haven't seen it in a really, really, really long time, but I also remember seeing it for the first time when I was maybe like 14 or 15 years old, and it seems like a really cool movie at the time, but, you know, again, maybe it was just a sign of the times.
Maybe.
We'll never know.
Maybe you'll like the remake. Do you want to get the next comment from Rob?
Sure. Rob says, the Eurovision special was great. I actually really liked hearing you chat about the surrounding politics. Hashtag politics hype.
We have that. It's called Millennial.
That's
we're just not on it.
True.
Thanks, Rob. Great comment.
I guess hosted on that once.
Did you? Oh, you did, didn't you? Connection.
Yeah.
See, we haven't yet.
I don't think we're going to be invited.
Don't think so either.
It's okay. I won't be invited back, probably.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was nice to catch up with couple of the hosts.
Maybe we will do politics hype.
Yeah. Well, today was
although we had some
hype,
politics
so.
This and equal and equal rights hype.
That's true
every episode that I'm on is feminist hype, let's be real. Okay, in the comments on our last post on hyperwood.com, Shana said, can't believe Belgium didn't get a mention. Very disappointed in all of you. Was Belgium the one with the guy and then he was in, like, black and all the dancers were in white or vice versa? And they did, like, the robot.
I think that was them.
They were good. I think I know who you're talking about. This is the thing about Eurovision. You get so into it and then you immediately forget it.
I know.
You have no memory of anything.
But you're right. You're right. It was the guy with the dancers. Yeah, he was good.
I quite liked them, actually. Yeah, me too. I'm surprised I didn't bring that up because I genuinely enjoyed that. I think he was one of those ones that was kind of the mid-range. Mm-hmm. But, like, it was good, but there wasn't anything super weird about it. So you just forget about it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. True. So, but no, there you go. Sorry, Shana.
And we talked about it now.
We did. Our final comment, Pam, do you want to get it?
Erica says, hold on, guys. I think I have to sneeze.
She didn't say that.
She didn't. It's just me. I still have allergies. No, it's got stage fright. It's okay. All right.
Okay.
Sorry, Selena. Erica says, I'm so excited you guys talked about Eurovision. This is my first year watching since I'm living in Spain now. And before, I was super confused why people were watching it, but now I love it. My favorite was definitely Heroes by Manzel Merlo. But I also really enjoyed Rhythm Inside from Belgium and Love Injected from Latvia. I wish there was a longer discussion of it, but still, I enjoyed listening.
Thank you, Erica. We wished that we could have talked about it longer as well, but it was pretty good. It was like 20 minutes of Eurovision.
We'll talk pretty about fun. It forever until next year. Yes. Every episode, we'll just do a little Eurovision segment.
Pick a new song and talk about it. Yeah. But like you said, we've already forgotten them, so it probably wouldn't be that interesting.
Yeah.
Love Injected, I was like, what?
Yeah, I can't even remember which one that is.
Okay, well, thank you.
Eurovision, yeah. So fickle.
I know. So that's the end of Hypeable's Hype episode 51. Before we wrap up, just want to remind you guys of the contact information, but actually also, we forgot this at the beginning, we have an Instagram account now. It's instagram.com/hypeablehype. I see today we have two pictures up. So thanks, guys. One from Yam Matters. Yam Matters. Yeah, I know. So, Merma, yeah, as you said, you hosted a panel. I hope that went well. It looks very professional, very fun.
Yeah, I taught them what OTPs and what shipping was.
They didn't know that.
Someone in the audience was like, what are your OTPs? And they were all like, oh, what's happening? And I was like, Ben and Leslie, Parks and Rec, mic drop. And the audience were like, yeah. But then I was like, wait, I have to amend my answer. Leslie and Waffles, Parks and Rec. And everyone was very
confused.
So it was worth it just for that moment.
I would have laughed. That's great. But so you should definitely check out our Instagram, because that's where sort of, as you've noticed, you've listened to Hype, that we actually, and when I say we, I mean Merma and Pam, actually do attend a lot of sort of fandom-related events. And we've got Comic-Con coming up. We've got a bunch of, you know, Harry Potter Studio, Orlando, Hollywood, whatever, I don't care. I'm not going to go. So all of those things. and what we hope to do with the Instagram is, and tying it to our Twitter, is sort of offer you guys a bit more behind-the-scenes access, because we are journalists and we do write about this and we do interviews and we attend screenings. We do fun stuff that we think you guys will probably enjoy sort of tagging along to on social media. So, yeah, I mean, and this is totally, you know, not to put any pressure on Pam and Merma here, but I'm totally going to put pressure on them, say I don't even have a phone, so this Instagram is 100% on you guys.
I know, the pressure is on. Do you know how hard it is to sit in LA traffic? You guys don't even know.
Yeah, I do know.
That's right, you have with me. We will both sacrifice for the good of the show, so you guys better follow, because it's all for you.
If I'd had an iPhone, I would have totally Instagrammed my way through my traumatic cinema experience the other day. So,
By the way, Selena, the wonderful thing about Instagram is that there's always room for Throwback Thursdays, so we will happily feature things that you have done in the past.
Awesome. Well, definitely. That's not very reassuring, but thanks. So please do follow our Instagram and our Twitter at Hypeable Hype. They're both Hypeable Hype to make it easier. And go to hypeable.com, which is hypable.com, for all the latest news and features and the podcast post where you can leave more lengthy comments. And as always, please take a moment to head on over to iTunes and rate and review us to help other people discover our show. We are expecting Spider-Man casting news to break within the next week, so we'll definitely be discussing that on next week's episode. And now that we've had our ranting out of the way, I think we can just be excited about whoever they pick, so that's going to be fun. That's it. That's the end of the show. Till next time, my name is Selena.
I'm Pamela.
And I'm Marima. Oh, so many us.
What about you, Pam? See, this is why I have to edit.
What? Where is she?
It was my bad. Sorry. Oh. I was talking. Oh, you're on mute? And then, yeah, I was on mute. I totally was like, well, I went to the movies too. All of a sudden, you started talking, and I was like, why isn't she being quiet?
We don't want to listen to that. God.
Yeah. My bad.